Welcome back, everyone, to Aspire, the Leadership Development Podcast, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper. This week, I'm very excited to be joined by Jessica Cabine, Principal of Austin, Minnesota, the 2016 NAESP Vinci Digital Leader of Early Learning Award winner, 2017 Minnesota Distinguished Principal, author of Hacking Early Learning, and co-author of Balance Like a Pirate. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my honor. And it's just, thanks for asking me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. And as you know, the show is centered on leadership development. And I just wanted to know what your personal leadership journey was.
Wow. And I knew you were going to ask that too. I think I came to education a little bit later. My initial undergraduate degree was in music therapy. And so I worked with adults with disabilities in Iowa for a few years and just started to realize I wanted to work with children and start to work at a younger age. So I went back to school and got my teaching degree and worked in special education. And then just one of those seed planting opportunities, the assistant director of special ed in the St. Paul Public Schools said, "We think you'd make a great director of special ed." So I'm like, okay. So I went and got my license and then landed in Austin, Minnesota, not Austin, Texas, as an assistant director of special education. And after a few years of that, I crossed over to the dark side and became an assistant principal, went over to the general ed side and did that for 3 years. I like to call myself a recovering assistant middle school principal because then I got the call to become the principal at the kindergarten center in Austin, Minnesota. So I went from teenagers to like a little bit older than a toddler.
Yeah.
And just recently made the jump back to the middle school. So I'm going back to where I started, but this time I'll be the lead principal of that campus.
So my entire educational career has been in middle school. What drew you to the middle school level?
Oh my gosh, middle school. I mean, it's middle school. It's the best. I love middle schoolers. I love everything about them. They're so honest. They have such big dreams. You can have really great conversations with them. Living where you lead, and especially in a more rural population where it's about 20,000 people, but we have just a huge diversity here. And so I get to know so much about so many different cultures and the hopes and dreams of a lot of our refugees and immigrant families, and just being able to 7th and 8th grade, like help them figure out what they want to do when they grow up and say I was part of that is truly inspiring. And it's going to be exciting because I have 1 year till I get all my classes of kindergarten again. So I'm going to get 6 years of kindergartners in middle school. So we'll see how that goes.
Was there a time that you decided that you wanted to become an administrator, or was there a person that influenced that decision?
Gosh, yeah, I think obviously the assistant director of special ed in St. Paul, I really admired her, and then the director of special ed. And I think for me, it's been so incredible because I've had so many female leaders kind of take me under their wing, and it's been inspiring. And I actually just had dinner with two of my mentors. One's a retired principal and one's a principal on special assignment here in Austin. And they both raised wonderful children and they survived and thrived through those teenage years as being a building principal. So I meet with them monthly and I'm like, just help me stay sane and help me raise good kids through this process, because leading a campus and being a mom has been a little bit more of a challenge than when I talk to some of my male counterparts in the work too. So definitely I've had at least 6 or 7 female principal leaders that have really inspired me to continue to dream big and bigger for kids.
So you went from the classroom to a special ed director position and then the director position to administration. So when you first became an administrator, what was the largest misconception you had in your beginning stages as an administrator?
That I had to have all the answers, that I needed to be the most knowledgeable person in the room, the expert, the one doing all the talking. And no better than becoming the principal of the garden center did that hit me smack in the face, because I had the title, but I didn't know what to do with 5-year-olds. I walked into this play center and they had tinker toys and Play-Doh and water tables. And I'm like, where's the grading for learning? Where's the PBIS initiatives? Where's, where's the flipped classroom? They're 5. You know, you can't just give them an iPad the first day of school and think we're going to be doing exactly what we're doing in middle school. So just slowing down and listening a lot and asking questions and leading from my feet have really done well for me. And I wish I would have done that more when I started.
So going from middle school to kindergarten is a huge transition. How long did you feel like it took to actually understand the role in that new setting?
Oh, a good 2 years. 2 years. I love to read and do research. And in Minnesota, they had just made all day, every day kindergarten kind of a reality. But the Austin community had it been going for 10 years. So we were a little bit ahead of the curve. So we had people coming to do site visits, and they would ask me questions about developmentally appropriate practices and transition from preschool and transition to first grade and dual language learners. And I'm like, I need to get my research going. So I spent a ton of time reading books by practitioners and professors and just asking lots of questions, going to lots of conferences. And really then at that point got to a point where I'm like, you know, I have all this information now. And that's when I decided to start writing the book, because I thought there's got to be other administrators or aspiring administrators that were secondary teachers that are now on an elementary campus. They have no exposure to that early learning continuum. And so that really drove me to write Hacking Early Learning, because it's such a unique age. And if you don't get it right, it can wreck their K-12 experience. If you don't, you know, if you don't do it right for kindergarten students and families and community, it can do damage. But if you do it well, it's an incredible way to start a child's life.
So as an administrator, what was one area that you wanted to change in education?
I think for me, it's been the perception of what principals do. I get a hard time when I see parents like, oh, I don't want my kid coming to your office, or, oh, you know, all you're in meetings and disciplining. And so it was a real shift, a mindset shift for parents to see me out on the playground and at bus duty. And now going back to the middle school, even some of the educators are like, you have selfie walls. You're going to do selfies with middle schoolers? I'm like, yeah, that's how I'm going to stay accountable to making positive phone calls home and making connections with kids. A selfie wall? I'm like, yep. Yep. And then there's been a couple other like leadership groups, and I've been doing some home visits and things like that. So I get a lot of questions about some of the crazy things I'm doing, but I also think it's important for the principal to really be a person too. Somebody that they can be relatable to, somebody who's taking risks, somebody who's trying to run the mile and killing herself while the 12-year-olds are lapping her during football practice or things like that. But just trying to be out there and available for people who have questions.
So have you always done home visits, or is that something new?
That is new this year. Because of the transition between kindergarten and middle school, I didn't really get a chance to meet the stakeholders before I started in July. And then I needed to wait for the business cards to get dry, because right now it just says I'm the kindergarten principal. So I chose some families. I went to about 30 families that maybe in the past few years haven't had such positive experiences with the office and school, and just knocked on the door and introduced myself. And a lot of times you could sense they were waiting for the ball to drop. Like, you're just here to see what I need. You're just here to see more about my child. You know, he's not in trouble. You're not mad at us. And I'm like, no. And once that layer of the onion was peeled, it was really neat to be able to go into the homes, to see the siblings, to ask about their interests, and then to see them. We have a district-wide registration day about a week or two later. And then I was able to get kids signed up for sports. I was able to kind of check in with them on their schedules. And then I did follow-up note cards home. So it's kind of interesting because, you know, as I said, 12 and 13-year-olds, they're going to tell you what they think. And one of the young men saw me from across the gym, and he kind of stared at me, and he's like, hey, you're the lady that came to my house last week. I'm like, yep, still your principal. Got me for 2 years. What are we going to do for college? Let's talk about college today. But it's been just kind of unique. So I think coming back to the secondary level, I'm finding there's more of what I learned in kindergarten that I can bring back up than I initially thought I could.
So as an instructional leader, how do you help your teachers grow in their knowledge and teaching strategies?
I model, and I usually model really poorly. I model poorly, so I set a low bar. So in the sense of at the kindergarten center the last year, I ended up offering to sub in classrooms per request of one of the kindergarten teachers, just to get my sense of what it feels like to be a teacher again. So after like day 13 in 2 months, I was pretty exhausted. The teachers got to see me trying things that maybe they were a little bit nervous of, and using technology and incorporating some of we use PSYOP and thinking maps, and with our essential outcomes, if we were trying a new strategy, if I went and practiced it, then I could go and have deeper conversations in our PLCs because I actually experienced it as a teacher. So coming back to middle school, I'm a little nervous about subbing in algebra classes because right now I've been working on state standards of counting up to 31. But I think just being in classrooms, asking a lot of questions, and I'm excited to see the as the instructional leader at the secondary level, you know, asking the students, what are you learning today? Just asking that open-ended question, what are you learning, and how are you learning that, and how is the teacher helping you grow in that, will just be a really great feedback loop for me to have as with seventh and eighth graders.
Yeah, and I kind of want to expand on that. What do you do on your campus to increase student voice?
One of the things is meeting them where they're at. So I am learning all about the Snapchat this summer. Because when I was here 8 years ago, we did not have Snapchat. I think we still had flip phones and a little bit of Facebook. So we started an Instagram platform. We have a Twitter. And so we have a Facebook link. So whatever I post to Instagram posts directly to Facebook so I can get the parents and the students at the same time. I have some leadership surveys. So I asked teachers to kind of give me groups of kids that they would be good for me to pull in for lunch. We're still not on school yet, but we have a lot of our fall sports already starting. So I've been able to pop into like cross country, pop into football, soccer, swimming. So I can kind of informally ask kids questions. And then we were fortunate enough this summer to be able to hire an incredible choir teacher. But in that process, I could bring a mock choir in. So in between interviews, I was able to ask them questions about, you know, what do you think are things that we should be excited about here? And what are some things I need to work on? And obviously beefy nachos. We took away the beefy nachos a few years ago. And unfortunately, I don't have any pull in that category. But maybe looking at how our lunchrooms run, maybe looking at passing time and the congestion in the halls and things like that. And then just following up with the kids. And I think the more that I'm following through with some of those things, the more apt they're going to be to come up to me and ask those questions.
So as the year goes on, especially, you know, like in October and February, as you feel the staff rapport slipping, what strategies do you use to increase teacher morale?
We look at, obviously, the rhythm of the year. And so we just did an activity because this will be my first year back at this campus. And so we did a retreat and I put pieces of paper all over with the months of the year, the calendar year. And people just wrote down the important things that go on in those months. And then that gives me a sense of where are our pressure points. Obviously, our state testing month, that was the only thing written on the month. So I'm like, well, that's not going to be a month we're going to be putting a lot of fun days and early release days and fire drills in. But so now I kind of know how to lead up to those things too. So I think knowing what are the priorities of the buildings you're walking into from the teacher perspective and the student perspective, so then you can build around that. And then one of the things we did on the kindergarten campus every December was like a holiday meal. So we were able to bring in food from a local restaurant, and then we all just sat together and ate. And we were able to pair it so like our paraprofessionals and the custodians and the cafeteria staff could do it. It was an early release day. And then I just had professional development that was a little bit more light on those days because December can be stressful for teachers. And we have a really diverse campus and a community. And so it can be stressful for kids too. And so really trying to have mindfulness activities, self-care activities, and just slowing down a little bit in those busier times of year has really paid off in the long run instead of just trying to keep going on a sprint pace for the marathon.
So for those starting their leadership journey, what advice do you have for them?
Well, and I can say, because I'm starting over at a new place where I thought I had it all and I came back, take breaks. I mean, it was super hard for me today. I have been working every single day since July 1, and it's 2 weeks before school starts, and I took Friday off. I went to a movie with my boys. We sat and watched Let's Make a Deal. It was so hard, but even the administrative staffs, like, you have been putting in 10-hour days, you know, and I think that's important for new administrators is you're not going to get it all done, and you're certainly not going to get it all done your first year. So really make sure that 5:30 every night you're signing off and you're walking out. And a couple nights a week, just keep the computer turned off. Spend time with your families on the weekend and plug into stuff you love. So I'm running a half marathon tomorrow. I don't think it'll be fast, but I've been training for it and just trying to keep my stamina up with some of the passion things I have in life. And I think it's also important that you model that as an administrator to your educators. I really always try to say there's no award for the car that's the last one in the parking lot at night. So don't worry about that. Go home and be with your family. And you need to put that oxygen mask on yourself first before you work with others. And I mean, I know you have campuses where you have a lot of trauma and a lot of hurt kids, and it's really hard for educators not to take that home. So, you know, really instilling those self-care things in yourself as an administrator, it models it for the staff, and they really need it.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to your admin position, you speak at conferences, you blog, and are very active on social media. How did you find your voice beyond the campus?
I think I just found that I'm a very vocal, vulnerable, and transparent person. So just recognizing that it wasn't going to be a perfect post, it probably would have spelling errors, it's not going to sound great, but I don't compare myself to others. It's just an accountability and reflection tool for myself. So it makes me really think more deeply about processes I'm putting in place and things I'm doing versus just doing it in my head and then just walking away from it. And I also think too, just finding different tribes of people. I was really, really immersed in the early learning world for the last 6 years, and I've met some great people, and I'm going to continue those connections. But this summer, I had to figure out secondary leaders and look at middle schools. And so I've been following a lot of different middle schools on Instagram and Facebook and connecting with leaders at the secondary level, because now this is new learning for me. So I'm trying to absorb all these new things. So I think it's important that you find your niche, you find who you really connect with, and then just grow and go from there.
So I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the last book, Balance Like a Pirate. For those who haven't read the book, what's that all about?
It's with two incredible co-authors, Jessica Johnson and Sarah Johnson, my neighbors to the east in Wisconsin that we connect with on Boxer like almost hourly sometimes. But we've been connected for the last few years and really started to have these conversations about not having it all, but get what you need. And we really look at balance in four quadrants. So you have personal, positional, passions, and professional. And so sometimes we know, like, for example, a lot of us, our positional quadrant is overflowing right now. Back to school, workshops, you know, getting things ready for the year. And so like our personal quadrant might be a little less. And so how do you make intentional connections with your family when you know you're putting in those long hours? And so the book walks through different activities and ideas in ways in which you can really stay fulfilled in so many different aspects of your life without overflowing too much in any one quadrant. So, and it was an honor to be able to ask a number of educators and other professionals to kind of give their vignettes and stories in it too. And really hearing how it's impacting people in a variety of ways has been really better than writing the book. Having somebody come up to me and say, you know, this has meant a lot to me. I'm really glad that I'm not the only one struggling with this. Thanks for sharing your stories. It's been just a blessing in itself.
So in closing, what do you think is the most joyful thing about being a leader?
The most joyful? I have to say high school graduation. I've been in Austin for 11 years, and so I do the bouncing at the high school graduation. So I get to help the students get lined up before they go up, and it's about 290, 300 students. And this was one of my last years that I had as middle schoolers. And so to go from 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, and be like, you actually graduated and you remembered me and you didn't think all I did was yell at you. And so, and then also getting to see them in college, and I've actually had a few of them have children come through the kindergarten center. So it's so incredible for them to come back 6 years later and say, you know what, you made a difference here. You know, because I know educators have such great connections with kids, and sometimes as administrators, you're just that one additional step away or that higher view up. And so when kids come back and say, I really appreciated what you did in my life, I mean, that just overflows for the rest of the year. So I already look forward to next year's graduation just because it's so neat to see those kids graduate high school and have big dreams for college and beyond.
So Jessica, how can our listeners connect with you on social media?
I have a website, jessicagaveen.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, and I have a Facebook page. So reach out in any of those platforms. I'm always available on Boxer too at Jessica Gaveen. So I love connecting with people. And usually when people say, well, I have a question, I learn more from that question and from them than I feel like I give others. So it's awesome to be able to connect with so many different people, and I learn so much from them too.
Please continue to check out the Aspire podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes and share your ratings and reviews. Don't forget to use the Aspire Lead hashtag as you continue the conversation on Twitter. Jessica, thank you so much for being on the program.
Oh my gosh, again, it was just a privilege. Thanks so much.